I would name my goat Charlton Heston. He's the goat.
You truly are the goat of goats.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Are they in the proper approach pattern for today?
Negative.
I wouldn't. I'd name him Earl.
Earl the goat?
Mm-hmm.
Manigault? I got it.
Manigault.
Yeah. There it goes. It's
pretty good.
I'd name him Throat. How about that?
God. Oh, you have fun with that.
It's just a name. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, I understand your fetish. Black Phil.
Black Phil? Hey, I'm Black Phil.
Black Phil and the Throat Goat. It's the name of your first album.
Black Phil and the Throat Goats.
Gotta write that down.
Pull that up.
Yeah, pull that up.
All right, welcome back to Dispatch Ajax.
Welcome back.
We already did that bit.
We did that bit. Well, welcome back to the
bit. We did that digital bit.
Okay, all right.
It's video games.
You're not going to try.
Bits and bites and boops and bleeps. You know.
Oh, the tech-savvy old man Nelson.
We're putting all the audio in a tube.
It's really good.
All right, welcome back to Dispatch Ajax. This is Jake.
I'm Skip or whatever.
Skip, this is your...
This is your life!
On video games.
Oh, well, that ended when things went 3D, so it's not really all that interesting.
No, it's gotten even worse. That's why we're all part of the simulation.
But at least it's linear, because I only did 2D scrollers, so it's easy to figure out.
Yeah, but we're a podcast that doesn't go back. It's only forward-facing.
We're the All Dogs Go to Heaven of podcasts. You can never go back.
Yes?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go there.
I thought we were more like the Milo and Otis of podcasts, where we just keep killing dogs and cats while making it.
Yeah, well, they all go to heaven, so it's fine. But you can never go back, you see.
But Stephen King said sometimes they come back.
Yeah, but does that really work out for anybody?
I watched Pet Sematary. It turned out cool.
No, it didn't. and B, even in the context of the story, no, it didn't. And also that prequel, no, it didn't.
Now this Ute is going to slice you in the Achilles with a scalpel.
You know what? That's what Pet Sematary needed. It needed Joe Pesci and Ralph Macchio as the subplot for the whole thing.
And Marissa Tomei is the ghost who keeps coming back telling you what's what?
No, she's the medium that comes in and tells you all the facts about the ghost.
Was there a ghost medium in Pet Sematary?
No!
Ah, I see.
That's the part she plays in...
You're adding to the mythos. I get it. Okay. Combining both films.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But also she makes her kind of like the one from Poltergeist.
Anyway, we're not talking about that at all today.
No, fuck Stephen King.
We are back in the land of video games.
Video games.
Yep. But I'd like to discuss with you.
Whoa. Hello.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hey, how you living?
In October 14th, 1982, people saw the largest protest in video games history when a crowd of 200 to 300 Native Americans, feminists, and anti-porn activists were clustered around a New York trade show to protest the offensive Atari 2600 games that were coming out.
Just curious, how many video game protests have there been?
6.
Okay, checking off the boxes here. Okay.
There were 6? No, I don't know, but that was quite a bit for protesting video games, especially at the time in 1982. They were protesting the games coming out from Mystique. Is not the X-Men character.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, Famke Janssen is not involved in this.
That was fucking Jean Grey. What are you talking about? I know,
She totally freaked me out as I'm watching Strange New Worlds. I was like, who is that? I was like, Rebecca Romijn. Oh, yeah.
Stamos.
Do not speak that word in this house.
Do not evoke his name. He appears in a Greek mist.
So, no, we will get into the history of the Mystique line of pornographic Atari 2600 games.
Or the Mystique of.
It's the unknown origin of the darkest of black magics.
Ooh, Aleister Crowley made a video game, huh?
I'd play that. I'd try it out. That's all I'm saying.
And damned forever.
Well, somebody had to do it.
They did. You were just kind of late to the game on that one, but if you feel the need for seed,
Oh, wow.
Sex magic, bitch.
Sex magic.
Go ahead.
So I'd done some research into these games, and it led me to an article from Kotaku.com called Porno Hustlers of the Atari Age, written by Critical Kate Willert. That's W-I-L-L-A-E-R-T. She does fantastic research on video games of the past. So if you are into this series we've done at all, I would highly recommend checking out their work. Lots of material about strange video games of the past or interesting origin stories of a lot of the things that you know and love. Really great work. So please check their stuff out.
It's important to remember that's not where we got the inspiration. We stumbled across this game independently online.
I found the games and then worked backward and then found this, and it was like, wow, this is fantastic. It's a great bit of reporting, extremely detailed, goes into a lot of different facets of both the origin of these games, the people behind them, and the far-reaching effects they had. So definitely check it out. I'm going to be covering a few things from it just because it's really good. Obviously, I'm doing more stuff also, but I just wanted to give some accreditation and promote their work. They have a YouTube channel. They're on Mastodon X.
Well,
written a lot of articles.
They obviously need our boost then.
Oh, yeah. No, they're...
The Dispatch Ajax bump will really boost their career.
Yeah, I doubt this will ever get to their ears. But, you know, if one person hears this and checks them out, then we've done a little bit of good in the world. So Mystique was actually the name of a series of games published by a company called AMI, American Multiple Industries. And that was founded by Joel Martin and Stuart Keston.
Please dumb it down a little bit. American Multiple Industries. We're not a conglomerate at all.
So Keston was a freelance marketing consultant who had formerly worked at Sterling Drug and L'Oreal. And Martin had worked in the toy industry. They were marketing and manufacturing a product called Classicase, which was a line of, quote, TV game cartridge containers, which sounds similar to the plastic cases later included with the Mystique games that we'll get into later. But they had an idea. What if they made adult video games with pornographic content? Huh?
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? So the pair incorporated AMI on July 21st, 1982, but they first started pursuing their concept in November of 1981. Keston had done some market research indicating that 1 in 3 Penthouse subscribers owned an Atari 2600. And so they thought, oh, there's plenty of people here to buy these games if we make them and put them out there for them.
If we force them to do it.
Keston spoke to a number of retailers and producers in the adult video industry who seemed to be pretty positive about the idea of adult video games. One particular company was Caballero Control Corporation, the CCC.
Did you say Caballero?
Caballero Brazilian? Control Corporation.
The partners. The CCCP.
CCC Production.
Yeah, that's good.
They had the means of production. So the CCC, or the Triple C, was known for the long-running video series Swedish Erotica, which originally originally began as a series of Super 8 films that were directed by the uncredited Ed Wood. So this goes back to early adult films in the 50s doing loops, which were erotic short films distributed to peep show booths and bought by people who had 8mm projectors. He would work on these at Cinema Classics. He would produce at least one full-length Ed Wood film, but it was the loops that really made the company their money.
Yeah, until Vine went under.
Researchers agree that Wood was responsible for at least the first 19 releases in the Swedish Erotica series. Now, you might be trying to figure out, why were they calling it Swedish? It was a Los Angeles company that was making these. Well, at the time, Americans viewed Sweden as a sexually permissive and liberal country, a reputation that might have been established in 1955 when Time magazine published an essay called Sin in Sweden, In Sweden, there was wide acceptance of birth control, abortion, promiscuity, and even sex education in public schools. Yeah.
It actually reminds me of the very real phenomenon of Americans up until even recently associating bidets with eroticism, because during World Wars I and II, when GIs would patronize prostitutes, prostitutes would clean themselves up with a bidet, which is like alien to Americans. And so they assumed that only whores used bidets.
Hmm.
It's kind of the same thing. It has nothing to do with anything. They just assume that.
That's fascinating. I did not know that connection. So as the Swedish erotica brand grew in prominence, Cinema Classics transformed it into the Caballero Control Corporation, the CCC, and also became an early adopter of the VHS format. In 78, VCRs were still pretty expensive and a pretty new technology, but the audience for adult videos was willing to pay a premium price. Merrill Lynch report estimated that adult videos made up half of all pre-recorded VHS sales in the 70s. So by the end of the decade of the 70s, Swedish Erotica had become one of the most recognizable brands in the adult entertainment industry. They had merchandise, playing cards, male aids. So then in August 82, CCC made a deal with AMI to license the Swedish Erotica brand in exchange for royalties to the games. Once they had the deal, CCC sent out announcements to 25 distributors only a week after AMI had officially been incorporated as a company. CCC Vice President Al Bloom talked to distributors that were already, quote, fighting for exclusive territories, despite the games being priced at $50 a piece, which would be $139 in 2021.
Ooh, yikes.
At the time when new games typically launched for $30, about $84 in 2021 money.
Which is funny because that's about what games cost now.
Yeah. Hasn't really changed. I mean, probably between 50 and 80. I don't buy games. What do I know? Who am I talking to?
Who are you talking to? Good question. I don't know.
The game's premium pricing was likely intended to mirror the adult video market. As rapid release schedule that would involve AMI launching its first three games in October, three more in January, and then one title each month throughout 1983. Thinking towards the future, Keston envisions AMI doing video game adaptations of actual triple C films, like Talk Dirty to Me and The Filthy Rich. And then once AMI had established itself, then it could follow in CCC's footsteps and then branch out into licensing children's cartoon properties.
Oh, good. It's a natural that makes next sense. Step.
Yeah. In 1981, Noel Bloom began purchasing the home video rights to various kids' cartoons and family films, and then releasing them under the name Family Home Entertainment.
Is this where you get all those Simpsons porn clips on Pornhub?
That's a bit later. But Family Home Entertainment became fairly big and recognizable. If you remember the logo of the little F, the H, and the E written out children's font color, they did stuff like children's cartoons like the Transformers, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, Inspector Gadget, Pound Puppies.
Never heard of them.
I don't know any of these.
And you leave my Pound Puppies alone.
Well.
You're going to get put down otherwise.
Yeah, so they were involved with a lot of that stuff, which is kind of weird.
It's not that weird. I mean, pornography can often directly lead into producing kids.
Huh. The stork keeps watching these videos, and then he's just dropping kids off. Yeah, so Family Home Entertainment was really just the beginning of a mainstream video empire known as IVE, International Video Entertainment. So in an interview in 82 with the Hollywood Reporter, it hadn't dawned on Keston and Bloom that the public might not react well to a porn company dabbling in children's entertainment. According to Keston, it's just that adult angle was the way to crack into the market. AMI's president Stuart Keston also later said, I just don't believe adults want to shoot down rocket ships.
Bullshit. They don't remember the Cold War at all.
Keston believed that if AMI followed CCC's previous example in the pornography industry and the VHS industry, that within a year, it would be the second biggest video game company after Atari, of course. AMI could port its games to other consoles, like home computers, maybe even license them to arcade game publishers. Perhaps it was inspired by the speech synthesis of the Texas Instruments Speak and Spell handheld computer that was released several years earlier. AMI was even brainstorming ideas for a handheld electronic game that would, quote, talk dirty to the user. So AMI was then working on its post-Christmas ad campaign. A representative told Advertising Age that AMI might invest as much as $4 million in ads in 1983. In October of 82, they would end up running retailer-focused versions of the ads with slogans like, "When you score, you score." In trade magazines like Billboard or Video Retailer. But the real campaign is planned to kick off the full-page ads in Playboy and Penthouse the following February. But by then, things might have become a little more rocky.
A little more Stallone.
A little less Frank, a little more Sylvester. So when asked about the CCC's Swedish Erotica branding, Keston claimed AMI only licensed it to gain credibility with the video retailers in the stores. Keston objected to the LA Times interviewer pushing back on, quote, X-rated games coming out, insisting that AMI games were more akin to dirty jokes than outright pornography. Quote, "Our object is not to arouse. Our object is to entertain. When people play our games, we want them smiling. We want them laughing." The dirty joke comparison is probably pretty apt, as two of the first three initial pornographic Atari 2600 game cartridges were little more than porn parodies of actual existing games. These are the first three. Bachelor Party, which is...
Sorry, Tom Hanks.
So Tom Hanks is bouncing off the wall. I'm going to show you...
His character's name is Tom Yanks.
Tom Yanks. Here you go. Here, do you see this?
Oh, Jake is presenting. Wow.
I present to you. So this is Bachelor Party. So you're a little guy who's bouncing off the walls, and you're trying to run into the staggered line of women.
Is that what they are? Okay.
That's what they're supposed to be.
I thought they were predators. I don't know.
If you look, they have their arm up to their head and their chest stuck out with their large breasts and their legs spread apart.
Their large one-pixel breasts.
Yeah. Instead of bouncing a ball off a wall of bricks, you bounce the nude man onto the wall of nude women.
Filthy.
Where you hope to,
bang,
make love to them sweetly and gently.
Oh, one pixel at a time.
There was also Beat 'em and Eat 'em.
Oh, my God.
This was a version of Activision's Kaboom, a game that normally about catching bombs before they hit the ground. But in the AMI's game, it's not a bomb-throwing madman. It is a nude man who is launching his semen into the mouths of women below.
Just like they always ask for.
Here, here you go. Oh, can you see? Oh, hold on. Stop presenting.
Pull your pants up, Jake.
Don't tell me what to do. All right, Skipper. All right, do you see this?
Oh, yes, unfortunately, I do.
Oh,
he's using his penis as a jackhammer.
You have to move the women down so that they catch the cum that's falling from the top of the building as he jerks off.
Why is it so yellow?
You
is
know
he
what?
Peeing in their mouth?
That might be urine.
Oh my God, he might be peeing in their mouth.
And so when they get enough, the women stop, smile, and lick their lips.
Kind of. I mean, they are pixels, so.
That's what is intended there. So
he's like pumping his dick like a jackhammer. Is he holding onto his balls on either side? Is that what that is? Oh, no, those are his hands?
I think those are his hands that jerk off his more than half his body's length of cock.
Well endowed. It looks like he's got an ET hanging off his torso.
Indeed. So that's Beat 'em and Eat 'em.
Wow.
You know, really good.
If you can't beat 'em, eat 'em.
Some publications refrained from describing the game, while others refused to even print the name.
Oh, who'd you think? Wow.
So those, you might say, were dirty joke games.
Oh, you think?
Taking a present game idea and doing a pornographic version of it. But it's their third game of the first generation that would really cause a scene. Custer's Revenge.
Oh.
It is a General George Armstrong Custer, you know, of Custer's Last Stand. Except in this game, he doesn't die. In this game, he is very much alive and nude and has a poorly animated 3-pixel long dick. And on the other side of the screen is a Native American woman tied to a post.
Oh, good.
Your object is to avoid arrows that are coming down at you so that you can make it across and rape the woman so that you can get your revenge on the Native Americans.
Wow.
Yes.
So you have to take revenge for slaughtering them? Okay.
Yeah. Have you seen this, Skip?
No, I have not actually seen it.
Here is your moment of zen here. Present.
Bend over. Oh my god. No. No.
Yeah, what do you see, Skip?
General Custer, only wearing a neckerchief and boots.
And a blue hat.
Raping a bound Native American woman over and over again. While, I don't know, is it hellfire that's raining
down? I believe
down?
That there are engine arrows that he has to avoid.
There's a teepee in the background, I see.
Yep.
And every time he rapes her, there's a cavalry charge music that plays.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. And feather in her hair moves back and forth
it
as he vigorously...
to his thrusting.
Yes. That's the game.
That's real generous for Custer. I mean, that's like a 9-inch dick, at least.
Oh, at least. Probably looking at a 12-incher. That's a foot-long coney, my friend.
How does he stay hard? Oh, it's because he hates native peoples. That's how he stays that hard.
It's true. It's also, like, when he moves, I do like that it flops up and down.
It does. It does do that when he moves. And then seems to somehow do it while he's inside her as well. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, there's a lot about this game that doesn't make sense. And
oh,
it's,
wait, you're telling me this isn't a documentary filmed in real time? Wow, that's maybe the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Well, it's up there with that Kyle Rittenhouse game. That's really awful. Really, really awful. Especially since, that's about revenge against people who you committed genocide on.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
When it originally came out, the LA Times piece never mentioned the woman is tied up, nor did the AP. When it got the first nationwide exposure, the Hollywood Reporter mistakenly thought the object was to rescue the maiden.
Oh, you mean like one of those like kill the Indian, save the person
thing? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But Native American groups and women's rights groups were taking notice. And so when the game was finally demonstrated in New York City, it got a bit of hubbub. On October 14th, 1982, AMI planned to show its Mystique games to trade press at the National Music Sound and Video Show at New York Hilton. But when it held a press conference at the Manhattan nightclub the evening before, the footage Custer Revenge briefly appeared on the television news, prompting next day hundreds of protesters gathered to give AMI a demonstration of their own. Local members of the American Indian Communities House of NYC, the National Organization for Women, Women Against Pornography, WAP means something different nowadays.
It sure does.
And others marched outside the Hilton, holding signs and chanting.
That's really egregious and awful. And the fact that we accepted that as entertainment is one of the worst things I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
So this is a woman that was outside during the protest with her sign that says, Custer's Revenge says rape is fun.
She's not wrong.
She is not wrong at all.
I mean, she's wrong about it being fun, but she is right about it saying that.
I mean, at the very least, the game is... incredibly dull, poorly made.
But that's even worse, though. Isn't that even more of a mockery that it wasn't even well made and it's boring to rape this indigenous woman?
I don't know. I don't think there's a good answer there.
You're right. I don't think there is a good answer.
Now, there are some people that claim that AMI itself stirred up the controversy and invited these local women's groups and American Indian organizations over to preview the game before it opened with the idea that no press is bad press.
Once again, is that more or less disgusting? It's probably more, if that were true.
Yeah. No, that means they 100% knew exactly what they were doing. And
didn't give a shit. Yeah.
Didn't give a shit. Wanted to make money off it.
Exactly.
So when TV Sessions were talking to Keston Martin about the game and the question of rape outside of the New York Hilton, Keston said, there is no rape and ravage scene in Custer's Revenge.
No, it's the whole game.
He told the feminist newspaper Heresies. He does make an impression on the Indian girl, but you can see she's having a good time. A smile comes across her face.
While she's nude and tied to a post.
The co-founder, Joel Martin, mistakenly identified as Joel Miller, told the AP he's seducing her, but she's a willing participant.
Wow, those are two separate things.
So if that's true, why would it be Custer's Revenge? Why would that be the name of the game?
Custer's Revenge, I wonder.
So once the game shipped, the back of the box provided a surprising answer. Revenge, it claims, is the name of the woman who's tied to the pole.
So she's just an object for his... Oh, you're not helping yourself here. Do you want a shovel to dig yourself deeper?
This is a little bit of gaslighting. Would almost be convincing if AMI hadn't previously put out a draft of the box copy in its early press kits that got quoted several times.
Oh, my God.
In that, it said, "You're General Custer. Your dander's up. Your pistol's waving. You've hogtied a ravishing Indian maiden and have a chance to rewrite history and even open an old score.
An
old score. Now the Indian maiden's hands may be tied. Every time old Custer makes a score, revenge is sweet."
First of all, they don't know what hogtying is, apparently. Second, wow.
In the final box, you're General Custer. Your dander's up, your pistol's waving. You've set your sights on ravishing a maiden named Revenge.
Well, they actually say it. Wow.
Yeah. Revenge is sweet. Every time old Custer scores, he comes up smiling and right back for more.
Oh, my God. And then it says skeet, skeet, skeet along the
bottom. Yeah. So after the protest, other people were angry with AMI.
Oh, you think?
Atari announced it was pursuing legal action against AMI. Keston took the news in stride, telling the United Press International that it's a compliment in a way. Here we are, a little company, brand new in this industry, and we're already attracting a lot of attention from someone as big as Atari.
Oh, wow. How oblivious. These are some serious sociopaths.
Well, I mean, they're coming from, you know, marketing of both toys and beauty products, so...
True. I just didn't realize how many, you know, you hear about Project Paperclip, you know, and the space program, but I never knew that they also inserted fucking Nazis into the fucking video game field.
So supposedly at the height of the fervor and fury over Custer's revenge, Atari claimed it was receiving 1,200 complaints a day about the game.
Yeah. A game that nobody's played.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there were First Amendment rights that the Atari's attorney was aware of around halting a game for obscenity. So they instead focused on the potential trademark issues involving AMI associating its games with Atari. Mm. They had some talks with AMI's attorneys, but the suits never went anywhere. But by the end of November, AMI would be suing an entire county in New York State. So in November 1982... Keston told activists that were angry with him that this was a way to crack the market. And if he had wanted to change his heart about it, he'd simply invested too much money in Custer's Revenge to cancel the game's release. Perhaps realizing it was impossible to appeal to AMI and its heads, the activists redirected their efforts to legislators. With $1 million already committed to his X-rated video game line, Keston has no plans for G-rated turnabout. On November 9th, Suffolk County, New York, passed a resolution declaring that any video game promoting a criminal activity was, quote, an imminent danger to the population. Keston asserted that the retailers refrained from placing orders for the AMI's Mystique games out of, quote, fear of prosecution, and filed a lawsuit requesting $11 million in damages, $1 million from the legislature itself, and $10 million from the specific legislator who sponsored the resolution, infringing on the company's First Amendment rights.
Okay, hold on. I don't know that covers... All right, okay, all right.
Suffolk's Commissioner of Consumer Affairs, Kenneth Rosenblum, agreed that the resolution was likely unconstitutional when he told the Suffolk County News that it would be similar to banning movies. He proposed asking the video game industry instead to establish a rating system.
Oh, no.
Similar to that of the Motion Picture Association.
Oh, did we just do this with Night Trap?
Instead of establishing the ESRB 10 years earlier, AMI quietly dropped the lawsuit after Christmas. This probably spawns out of the assistant county attorney's claim that the county attorney was only planning to regulate publicly displayed arcade games.
Oh my God.
So if you played it at your home, they weren't going to pursue you. But if it was a game in a cabinet at a local place, then they would go after those.
Well, I don't understand this. So if Atari won't touch it, what platform is this supposed to be produced and played on?
So, no, these games are made for Atari.
Right.
So
that's how you could assume that Atari would sue, because it's like a proprietary...
Well, see, at the time, this will come up later, but Atari was allowing third-party people to make games for their system?
Sure, I guess.
Which led to this, and we'll get into how that changes the industry later on.
Oh, Oh, boy. It's very similar to how, like, you know, Apple is really draconian and money-grubbing and awful when it comes to how closed down its app store is. But at the same time, when you have a more free open market ecosystem like Android, especially the non-Google Android stuff, you have more open abilities and you have freedom, but then you get shit like this. You get like a Russian bot that steals your money or something, you know?
Yeah.
What's a good middle ground? I mean, is it authoritarianism or is it laissez-faire Thunderdome? Seems like there has to be something in between there.
Yeah, I don't know what that answer is, honestly. So in Suffolk County, they were making retailers afraid to buy these games, as it was apparently never offered up for sale in the county, according to the Long Island Journal. So the AMI began running newspaper ads that allowed people to order video games via mail instead, since they might be too timid to try and procure one of the Mystique titles in a local establishment.
You know, it used to be illegal to transport pornographic images across state lines through the mail in general. So I wonder if that ever came legal.
That I don't know.
I don't either. I'm just saying I know that's a fact because they used to get people on pornography charges all the time. It's interesting.
In December, Keston kind of got a little more, how should we say, out there. Yeah, douchier might work with his responses to his game lines and the fury against them. Telling Video Game Magazine, there's no violence or venereal disease. We have entertainment in mind.
Oh, wow.
He also said that he lets his 11-year-old son play the games.
Oh, my God.
But wouldn't want them available to kids who aren't my responsibility, quote unquote.
Oh, Jesus. So that he can tell him it's okay to rape Native American women.
Now, this was a change from his November profile in People Weekly, in which he claimed he didn't let his 11-year-old play, but my other kids think Custer's Revenge is terrific, and my wife loves it. But others in the company might go even further. One unidentified representative told Miss Magazine that the characters, quote, are not doing violence to women. The only thing that might be construed as violent is tying an Indian maid into a post and ravishing her. But he doesn't beat her first.
Oh, my God. You just, first of all, you started out with Indian. That doesn't help you much.
Well, it is 1982.
Yes, this isn't 1882.
I don't know. I mean, we still had Redskins as,
oh, don't
I mean.
Even, and it, even as Chiefs fans, we're pushing it.
Yeah,
so I know.
Now, even if the games weren't hot-button topics about their crude and lascivious nature, they were generally thought of as pretty unimpressive in their gameplay. Video Gaming and Computer Gaming Illustrated criticized Custer's Revenge as being boring as boring can be, consisting of simply running from a screen left to right, and that they found Beat 'em and Eat 'em tedious.
See, that's one of the good things about hardcore right-wing assholes like that, is that they're very rarely good at things, you know? Mm. Like, there aren't a lot of good right-wing comedians. They don't make good movies. I mean, look at Ben Shapiro's fucking production company, you know?
Did you see his new rap video?
I'm going to pretend no one said that, ever, so I can stay innocent and pure. But, I mean, thankfully, like, even with that Kyle Rittenhouse game.
Yeah, it's the liberal, Jew-run Hollywood establishment that's probably the issue. It's the coast.
Oh, you mean
you know? That's
the coastal elites, yeah. Which also is a standing for Jew.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah. Arnie Katz. The publisher of the biggest gaming magazine of the time, Electronic Games, says he supports the existence of adult games as a concept, but believed that the proper way to really deal with Custer's Revenge is to simply ignore it. This was made easy by the magazine's editorial policy that all content in it remained suitable for all ages, but that resulted in some behind-the-scenes drama when one of its regular advertisers, a company called GAMES, used its pre-purchased space in December issue to run a last-minute Mystique ad.
Oh, God. But they're willing to take that money.
Yeah, I mean,
don't take their money. How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well,
you're a private company. That has nothing to do with the First Amendment. If you don't want to take their money, don't take their fucking money. Don't be like, well, too bad, we have to take it. Fuck you. Don't take their fucking money.
It's true.
It's a pretty simple solution.
another magazine, Electronic Fun, didn't review the Mystic games either.
Sex toy magazine for Electronic Fun.
But he told The Record in October of that year that the games were funny in concept. Some people are taking the games too seriously.
Oh my God. Now, he used the N-word before in front of his kids. I guarantee that.
No, this is she.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah. She said she had doubts about the quality. I think they'll sell as a novelty item, but I wonder whether people will play the games for any length of time.
She sounds like the kind of person whose, like, direct predecessors owned a plantation. Yeah, well, I mean, but that's kind of the mindset, right?
Yeah. But maybe this novelty angle was good enough for AMI. According to trade magazines, the company was already preparing to reveal a second wave of games in January of 83 at the Winter Consumer Electronics Show, the E3 of its day. So in January 1983, the highly controversial X-rated game Custer's Revenge has vanished from the scene, as has its marketer, AMI.
Did you get black bagged? Because that'd be awesome.
Says a Weekly Television Digest.
The thing we always read.
The people that were representing, the spokespeople who had been representing AMI and Mystique Games at the booth, had been replaced by a new product called Play Around. And those spokespeople who were now representing a new company called GameSource. After the WCES gaming convention ended, GameSource sent out a press release announcing that GameSource has taken over the North American rights for sales and distribution from American Multiple Industries for their adult line of video games. But the biggest news was the company would be discontinuing Custer's Revenge. We will be discontinuing Custer's Revenge in our adult video game line because we believe that even though AMI's intent was to depict an entertaining, amusing scenario, the game to symbolize rape and racism in the eyes of too many people.
What do you mean symbolize? It literally portrays.
We are 100% in favor of good sexual fun between consenting video images, but no company would want to associate with either racism or violence toward women. Such themes have no place within the context of a video game.
Oh, man, that means like today a lawyer would argue that it's not about consent because they're not real people. You know, I mean, along that same line of thinking. That's exactly what would happen.
Yeah. So the remaining two Mystique games, Beat 'em and Eat 'em and Bachelor Party, would be folded into the revamped Playaround line of adult Atari 2600 games. The Playaround lineup added three new game concepts, bringing the total to five, plus added gender swap versions of each, which gave the appearance of 10 games total.
Wow.
The spokesman, Richard Lewis, not the comedian, these games would be more challenging and intricate. We're designing them more for real video game players. So they'll be interested once they get past the dirty joke aspect of the games.
A dirty joke, huh?
Now, these three new games, one of them was Night on the Town. That's Night with a K.
Okay.
And it's gender swap version Lady in Waiting. Now, this would involve rescuing your dear prince or princess who is held captive in a castle tower, building a bridge across a moat where they'd be dodging beasts or crocodiles in the water underneath them. And the
Willow scenario.
You would be completely nude except for having a knight's helmet on.
That's so. What's your sword then?
You don't fight anything. You're literally like just getting tiles running across. I was going to show you, but it's kind of too boring to show. You just put tiles down. You build a floor until you get to the end where on the stoop is your person. Once you get to that end, they fall down and then you guys 69 each other.
Oh, okay. So it was really, really, I was really turned on by all the infrastructure talk. But then that one, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Or so he's got his dong hanging out the whole time?
Yes. Yeah. He is naked and his dong's hanging out.
Okay.
And the gender swap version is that, you know, the princess is trying to go get her knight.
Yeah, go get that knight.
Yeah. Which we'll talk a bit about that later.
She'll let him get it.
There was also Burning Desire. Also, it's gender swap version of Jungle Fever.
Starring Mickey Rourke. Oh, God. Jungle Fever. Oh, come on. No.
Now, this involves rescuing your dear damsel or the male equivalent who is about to be burned on a flaming pile. But you have jungle natives who are throwing things at you.
Oh, my God.
So you're the character, and you are hanging down off of a helicopter. You are naked. You are strapped to the helicopter, and your dick is hanging down. And you must spit on the flames while hanging nude from the helicopter, to get them low enough so that then you can then lower yourself on the helicopter so your penis goes into her mouth.
Wait, are you sure they're spitting?
Here, I will give you a little...
I believe
you. No, you should witness this for yourself.
Oh, God.
Here is...
At least it wasn't a boiling cauldron where they're saying all black people are cannibals or something.
Well, you can't tell. These are...
Oh, my God. He's real generous with that dick.
So, you see him spitting. See, he's spitting on the flame.
I like how the African people are just blue-colored demons.
Yes. Yeah, they are truly look demonic.
Yeah. Oh, so they all went to Duke.
Oh, shit. She burned alive. But there's a new one.
Oh, man. I don't remember this part of Temple of Doom.
There we go. So once we get...
Bull of Jihado. Oh, my God. He actually inserts his dick in her mouth.
Yes. That's what I'm trying to get so that we can...
She
gets excited for it. And then put it in.
The world's tiniest helicopter.
Got to spit that flame down. They're trying to hit your helicopter.
How does he have that much saliva?
Here you go. The flames are low enough, and he dodges, and then, she jumped up to suck that dick.
Oh, is that how you pull her up? She latches onto
your
dick?
Yes.
That doesn't even sound... That's not even funny. It's just... That doesn't even... Oh, okay. All right. Oh, no. This is bad. This is really bad. Oh, this is extremely...
And this is what happens
once
you get her and you pull her up by your dick as she's sucking on it, then it cuts to a 69ing... But it's
a cutscene.
Yeah, it's an early version of a cutscene where it's actual like almost painted characters who are going down on each other.
That's so. I don't know how many ways you could possibly be offended, but I think they'd hit all of them.
Yeah, yeah. But that seems like the more fun game as opposed to Cat House Blues.
Oh no!
Which is a game of memory. It opens with 7 sex workers leaving prison. You must memorize which house they enter so that you can score with each of them without entering the wrong house. But you also must avoid the cops. You must stop at the bank occasionally so that you can pay the sex workers. But if you carry too much money at a time, a mugger will appear and try to steal it from you.
Wait, does that mean you're playing as a pimp? Or are you playing as a John?
I think you're playing as a John.
Okay. Well, that doesn't make it any better, but...
No.
Well, I mean, it's better to be a John than a pimp, I guess, but... Marginally.
So here's a Cat House Blues. Pretty exciting. You see the women in prison, and they get out, and they go...
Oh, this is just Pac-Man.
It's... I wish this was Pac-Man. It's so much more boring.
It's the same gameplay and the same sounds. Oh, I like how you have 3 penises up top.
Yep, you got your 3 penises.
3 dick and balls.
You got the cops chasing you.
So I'm guessing that the penises are your lives.
I believe that the penises are your lives. Which I can identify with that.
That's okay. Well, we'll deal with that later. I like how when they get taken to the prison, your life is taken away, but they only take away the shaft.
The
but shaft, not the
they
balls.
Leave the balls.
What is that
I
about?
I have no idea. The thing about this, it's not even like salacious. There aren't any naked women. It's not even like a sexual game. You're just trying to avoid the cops as you're supposed to be going into these crudely drawn houses to supposedly sleep with these women.
Well, it's not salacious because they're not people. There's not enough RAM to make that a person. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
There's also a gender swap version of this called Gigolo, where you are a woman trying to sleep with them.
Which means you just swap the colors.
So these 10 games will double up into 5 cartridges, thanks to an innovation called 2-in-1.
Thanks to an innovation called threesome.
So the cartridges had openings on both ends, so you could flip them over to play a second game. There's additional gaming in the rear.
Thanks to the innovation called spit roast. Oh, no, that's terrible. And good. All right.
So the pricings for the cartridge remain the same, essentially giving customers 2 games for the price of 1. The games were packaged with a small lock and key that could be used to lock the included plastic case, an idea Keston first thought of way back in October when talking to the LA Times about Beat 'em and Eat 'em. So after the bombshell announcement of the Game Source switch, Kasdan told The Oklahoman that AMI was exiting the video game business entirely. The publicity was just so negative, and it was interfering with the company's business.
Oh no, the backlash against the horrible things you do were interrupting your business? What?
If you read the article, then it gets into some weird talk of people owning different companies and being on boards, maybe setting up shell companies and owning other industry sources and publications to flip things, and then selling the rights to Japan for different things. It kind of gets a little more off the rails than what we necessarily wanted to get into here.
Yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, nobody actually on any level of success or financial success or prestige or notoriety, does anyone actually give a shit that this is really negative and bad? It's just on a scale of, does it make money or not?
Yeah. And speaking of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So in August of, I think, 81.
Hey, that's when I was born.
Al Bloom projected to the Hollywood Reporter that AMI would ship a total of 500,000 units at the beginning of November and 750,000 each month after that, for a total of 2 million units at the beginning of January.
Wow.
But by the end of September, Kasdan had adjusted the figure to 750,000 total, and by mid-October had settled for just 500,000 total. In January, an unnamed GameSource spokesman told Newsday that Custer's Revenge had sold 75,000 copies. Some people have framed that as only 75,000 copies, while others lamented the sad fact that it still sold as many as 75,000 copies.
I'm in that camp.
But according...
Only 6 million Jews died!
According to Stuart Kasdan, the game actually sold a lot more, and the number he gave New York Times was 200,000. But was the 200,000 units good or bad? It's hard to say, since so few Atari 26,000 sale numbers exist. However, in November, Kasdan had told Fortune that if AMI met projections, it was going to make $13 million in sales on a $1.2 million investment. Yeah.
Wow, and especially in retrospect, when you look at the game, just even aesthetically, and you're like, how the fuck did you get talked to by Fortune magazine?
Well, I mean, this is...
I mean, are you fucking kidding me?
I mean, someone who's going to make $13 million in 1982 money, you know, as a brand new company, yeah. That's probably...
I know, but on so many levels. Horrible, racist, misogynistic, dystopian hellscape that we've created here. But also, it's a game that sucks, it's boring, and the graphics suck.
I think if anything could sum up Reaganomics properly, maybe it's this whole scenario.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big part of it, yeah.
Now, those other games that PlayAround had made, how did they sell? Well, obviously, it wasn't good. Given that PlayAround stopped making new ones after their second round. But how did it do? We don't know, because no one even bothered covering those numbers. So there aren't statistics for that. Now, had AMI killed the adult video game market? Alan Roberts, who is the creator of X-Man, an adult Atari game, not to be confused with the Marvel Comics property, he told Video Gaming and Computer Gaming Illustrated in 83 that we are anticipating terrific business, but it has been hindered as a result of the Mystique line and the bad press that came with it. It was a very negative beginning for the adult game industry. It created a problem on a store level. Now, one might see that as the problem, but you can see in October 1982, an issue of Billboard magazine, that AMI ran an ad for Mystique line that also was featured next to an ad for Atari's E.T. game, a game that became synonymous with the great video game crash of 1983. In short, the adult game producers were entering the home video game market at the worst possible time. So contrary to popular belief, Great Video Game Crash of 1983 wasn't a quality issue that resulted in consumers losing confidence, but a quantity issue that resulted in a loss of retailer confidence. The industry was growing so fast in the early 80s that publishers couldn't keep up with production and would only give retailers half of what they ordered. So retailers, obviously, started then doubling their orders to get the quantity where they needed and wanted. When production caught up during the Christmas season of 1982, retailers found themselves with more product than they could sell. Not only did they adjust their orders back down in 83, but they became hesitant to buy new product at all until they sold through the old stuff. Stores then slashed prices, creating a glut of discount stock that was great for kids wanting cheaply to expand their video game libraries, but terrible for publishers hoping to release new, fully priced games. As a result, Nintendo had its work cut out for it when the Japanese game company entered the U.S. console market in 1985. One strategy for repairing retailer confidence was a lockout chip that prevented third parties from publishing games for the Nintendo Entertainment System without going directly through Nintendo, so it could then control the number of games produced. Nintendo was also very strict about what kinds of content it would allow, which prevented the existence of console games with more explicit themes in the United States for the rest of the 80s. So that's one of those things that I talked about because of what Mystique had been doing and the problems that Atari had, and then flooding the market with all these games, Nintendo made their game system only playable with games they produced and had full control over, which then became an industry standard going forward after that. While Custer's Revenge kind of holds credit for like sparking the first big controversy in video gaming, although, I mean, the first big controversy might have involved Exidy's arcade game Death Race, which we might cover.
Interesting.
Perhaps the strangest legacy of Mystique and Playground Games was the number of playable female video game characters that were introduced, a time when they were nearly non-existent. So, like, in the arcades in the 1982 era, you could play a Ladybug, a Kangaroo, or a Miss Pac-Man. But if you stumbled across the rare arcade game that starred a human woman, she was most likely naked. Home consoles also experienced a similar problem thanks to Mystique and Playaround Games. By the end of the Atari 2600's lifespan, the console featured only 10 playable human women. Sadly, Joel H. Martin's nude female protagonist accounted for more than half of them. Ugh. But they also did... It's damning that they only had these naked females, but they also did give the version of playing with female characters for these boring, monotonous, grotesque, porn parody-esque games. Ugh. But at least there was some representation? Eh?
I guess?
I don't know. It is an interesting double-edged sword that they progressed in some ways by even having female characters. But I don't think that the intent was to have female characters. It's just more nude women in games.
Oh, yeah, because they're not female characters. They're just props.
Yeah. In an industry where there were just no female characters you could play as, especially not human ones, it is a damned slight step forward in the totality of gaming's. But there would then, you know, go on to be plenty of other pornographic games after this. Games would become much more sexualized, but perhaps not in such a crass way as graphics got better. I mean, you know, you do have your Leisure Suit Larrys and whatnot.
Well, I mean, Tomb Raider. I mean,
At least she's wearing clothes.
Well, okay, sure, yeah, barely.
Yeah, I mean, when you are creating female characters in just about any genre of entertainment, especially designed for young boys and men, whether it's comic books, movie characters, video games, it's always going to be TNA is what sells.
Yeah, that's sad.
It is. Sometimes you have to look past that to a point and that hope that that is an avenue that then allows for better representations. I think something like that has happened in comic books. You have an industry that's dominated by big pecs, big tits, big guns, you know, especially like, you know, early on, and then pulls back, flares up again, I think, in the 90s, and is pulled back into a much more reasonable depiction of a lot of women. Or even like, you know, it goes the other way where you have something like the Hernandez brothers where they're doing both. You know, you have like actual depictions of everyday women paired with their insanely triple L, you know, sized breasts and their pornographic eccentricities. But it's like those are cloistered in a certain spot and they're also told with actual characters. I don't know. They're a unique example probably to bring up that's towing the line between both worlds, really.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
But as a wrap-up here, there's been plenty of quote-unquote sexy games that have continued to come out. It will always be paired with the advancing technologies, just as they were paired with the VHS, early arcade games and Atari games, and then into, say, the virtual reality world. Whatever the next step of gaming life will be, you can be guaranteed that pornography, sex, salaciousness will be right at the forefront and the next step.
Elvis always decides media formats. Pornography decided the between Beta and VHS. It decided between HD, DVD, and Blu-ray. It's the reason we have embedded streaming videos in websites. And the weird novelty of VR, which nobody's able to figure out yet because it was such a weird disaster in the 90s. They just do live-action stuff that's in binocular vision, and you can watch on a VR headset. They're going to figure it out.
They always do.
Never underestimate the power of jerking off.
It's propelled me to new heights.
It's like you skyrocketing into the air.
Now I'm hanging from a helicopter trying to shoot my gun. Oh, man. So that was the latest. Your twiddling deacon. Or
you are a twiddling deacon. That's your official title and role. You're a twiddling deacon.
Deacon's blue balls, really.
The confession booth has never been more salacious.
Diddle and tweak. The caballeros.
That's our new mantra.
Sorry, Mom, I can't come out right now. I'm diddling and tweaking.
I'm diddling, he's tweaking. Which isn't the same as it used to be with tweaking, an old raver thing.
Tweaking was different in my day.
And now it's all over the place. You can do it at home.
You don't even need Bush's razor blade suitcase playing.
I remember when Molly was just Molly.
Oh, Molly. She was a good friend.
My first love, Molly.
She died. Bee sting. Nobody saw that coming.
And then came fentanyl.
Oh, Fent, I love you so.
Passes out and dies.
That's Tweaker Joe. Yeah, that's how he...
Old Tweaky Joe.
He died as he lived.
He died as he lived, covered in glow bracelets. I like the old man prospector rave kid. I remember when it was called house music.
What are all these traps for?
Man, I used to set traps. It ain't the same anymore.
Back when I made my money selling furs.
By that I mean bush. By that I mean pussy.
I was a merkin salesman on the market.
I was a mercantile salesman. That's funny. I don't know where we're going with that.
We're going nowhere, and that's this podcast.
Yeah, I know, and tune in next time where we're going to be we're going to have an opening band, Black Phil and the Throat Goats.
Come early, stay late.
Come often. So, I guess that's it, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
We shot our wad, I guess that's it.
We shot our digital wad, indeed.
We sure did.
We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please come back next time for some more diddling and tweaking fun. Please like, share, subscribe. Pass around all your friends, co-workers, family members, dudes on the street.
Fuck Custer.
Fuck Custer.
We're going to take a controversial stand. This is a yeah. Hot take. Fuck Custer.
Yay, Little Bighorn.
I'll show you a Little Bighorn. Oh. Why didn't they make that joke any of that time, that whole time in the game? I don't understand.
They might have. Who knows? Please like, please rate us on the podcast app of your choice. Ideally, Apple Podcasts. That's the best way to seen. If you want to give us 5 beat 'em and eat 'ems, we'd greatly appreciate it. Skip, what should they do after this?
This is Custer's Last Stand. So let's show our support for the brave man in blue hat. the brave man in the blue hat.
And that's it.
The nude man. Brave nude man.
The brave nude man with his kerchief, his boots, and his hat.
Raping a bound woman. It's so fucking terrible.
He doesn't beat her first. And she smiles, huh? Huh?
Does she?
I
don't think there are enough pixels to show a smile.
I can't believe those are the things they tried to say about the game.
But this was the 80s, not the fucking 1910s. Oh my god. So on that downer of a note, please don't forget to clean up after yourselves to some sort of reasonable degree. Don't forget to pay your tabs. Don't forget to support your local comic shops and retailers. And from Dispatch HX, which is the two of us, we would like to say Godspeed, fair wizards.
Please, go away.